Chapter 5. Unintelligent Design, From Theory to Dogma to Cognitive Dissonance. The key to the belief in a purely physical universe is the belief that life simply evolved without any intelligent design, that matter simply assembled itself according to laws of chemistry and physics. There is no need to imagine a creator as an explanation of how living things came to exist. Unintelligent design is plausible in the case of inanimate matter. Hydrogen atoms, through nuclear reactions, such as the ones right now taking place in the sun, could have fused into helium atoms, and helium atoms could have fused to create heavier atoms, which then became random material scattered throughout the universe. Clouds of random materials would be condensed into spherical objects by the force of gravity. Within those spherical objects, further atomic, physical, and chemical interactions would take place. We would have a pattern of mineral substances deposited as we now see them in the universe, with clear physical explanations of how they became that way. But living things are much more complex than simple mineral substances appearing here and there. The living thing right away is organized to do something. A living thing interacts with the materials in its environment to create other organized structures similar to itself. Right away, a self-replicating entity is far more complex than anything that human beings have ever invented. No, a self-copying computer virus doesn't count. A computer robot that is able to go out into the real world, find the raw materials, make the parts, and assemble them into an entity like itself is more like it. I'm appealing to the medical profession's understanding of just how complex a system the human body is, and what a complex code of genetic information is built into every cell. Of course, life didn't start this way. It started with simple one-celled organisms, but they all had the capacity to create more of their kind from the material in their environment. And I repeat on purpose, no human being has ever, to my knowledge, created such a self-replicating mechanism. So we have had to have the concept of a god to explain such a thing. Actually, we have had to have the concept of a god to explain the creation of the universe as well. Scientists now have the Big Bang theory, but that doesn't explain it. It only begs the question, what created the Big Bang? There are questions we can't answer. Philosophers and scientists should be smart enough to know that we can't answer them, but still people try. Charles Darwin observed that various species were able to modify themselves through random mutation and natural selection to adapt better to their environment. Offspring are never exactly the same as their parents. This is the random mutation part, and those offspring that are better adapted to their environment have a better chance of surviving through their reproductive age and passing on their particular adaptive features to their offspring. This is the natural selection part. This whole process of species being modified by random mutation and natural selection to better adapt to their environment is called adaptation. Adaptation has been proved many times by biologists and can be demonstrated mathematically. If a certain mutation enables an individual to survive and produce 10% more offspring than an individual without the mutation, then after one generation, that individual will create 1.1 times as many offspring as an individual without the mutation. If the mutation is also passed along to the offspring, then the second generation will gain another 10%. 1.1 times 1.1 and have 1.21 times as many offspring as those without the mutation. It is an exponential progression, with the proportion increasing by 1.1 times with each generation. So, after 128 generations, the descendants of an individual having the particular characteristic will outnumber the descendants of another individual whose descendants have never been interbred with that characteristic by 1.1 to the 128th power, or about 200,000 to 1. From this observation, Darwin theorized that the process of adaptation by which a species were able to modify themselves was also the process by which a new species were created. Apparently, he wasn't all that sure of his theory because he waited 20 years to publish it until Alfred Russel Wallace proposed a similar theory, thus pressuring Darwin to publish his own. Then T.H. Huxley and others picked up on it and extended it into a theory of the origin of life itself. This extension of Darwin's theory made physicalism a plausible belief system. We didn't need a god, a creator, as an explanation of how living things came to exist. It was possible to believe in a purely physical universe. People who had outgrown the need to believe in the mythology of an authoritarian and judgmental religion seized the opportunity to get rid of the spiritual altogether and believe only in the existence of the physical reality. I've been in trouble calling Darwin's theory the theory of evolution, because then people switch definitions on me and point to the mountain of evidence supporting the evolution of life. First of all, this definition switching is an illegitimate argument. Scientists know this and even have a word for it, but because those people who might want to switch definitions on me, I no longer use the word evolution to describe Darwin's theory. I refer to it simply as Darwinism. And the idea that life evolved without benefit of any intelligent design, I simply call unintelligent design. I don't want to argue about what Darwin said or didn't say. I want to focus only upon the essential point of whether life evolved without benefit of intelligent design. That theory was not wholly Darwin's, but evolved out of the cultural consciousness of the time. But Darwin's theory, or Darwinism, was the key to the belief in unintelligent design, which in turn was the key to the belief in a purely physical universe. And the idea of unintelligent design was adopted by the culture and was fully embedded in the cultural consciousness long before the evidence to support it had been accumulated. And the evidence, once accumulated, did not support it. In 1983, I read in the Encyclopedia Britannica that new species have appeared too quickly in geological time to be accounted for by the process of adaptation, which is too slow. It seemed to me that this disproved Darwin's theory, and given the huge complexity of any living species and the relative suddenness at which new species appeared, it certainly seemed that some kind of intelligence was at work making this happen. The evidence was more in favor of intelligent design than unintelligent design. But biologists were blocked by the dictates of physicalism from offering any such so-called supernatural explanation. They were only allowed a physical explanation. Some of them simply denied the evidence. Others kept Darwin's theory alive by modifying it with the theory of punctuated equilibria, hypothesizing that some radical change in the environment must have forced the process of adaptation to speed up. The problem with that theory is that you have to show some radical change in the environment for every new species that evolved too quickly. Or, as pointed out by a person I knew who had studied biology, the most likely result of a radical change in the environment would be extinction. More recently, I have become aware of the Cambrian explosion some 450 million years ago, when many new species appeared suddenly in geological time, fully formed, with very little evidence of the gradual steps of adaptation. This is more evidence to refute the theory that the process of adaptation was the same process that produced new species. Adaptation, the modification of individuals within a species, and speciation, the evolution of a whole new species, are two different things. Animal breeders know that there are limits beyond which members of a species cannot be modified. As far as I know, speciation has never been accomplished in the laboratory, whereas adaptation has been achieved many times. Where did I get this information? I got it from biologists. It appears that biologists themselves, in amassing their mountain of evidence over the years, have actually found the evidence to refute Darwin's theory. But they can't admit that, because Darwin's theory is the key to their whole belief system. In defense of their beliefs, they come up with authoritarian statements, assuring us that Darwin's theory is still alive and well. At some point, Darwin's theory ceased to be a scientific hypothesis and became quasi-religious dogma. Around 1950, biologists were searching for the missing link. They never found the missing link, which would have shown the continuity of the adaptation process. And then they simply stopped searching for it. By the 1980s, when I tuned into Stephen Jay Gould on TV to see what proof of Darwin's theory he could offer, he simply started off with Darwin's theory as a given, a first premise, a fundamental truth, which he built upon by showing us a wonderful sample of adaptation. Biologists are suffering from what Leon Festinger called cognitive dissonance. This is when serious believers suddenly find their beliefs contradicted by evidence. They could use some psychotherapy, but their in-group would shun them if they turned to psychotherapy, and especially if they abandoned physicalism. They are stuck. So they turn their intelligent minds to clever arguments. When Philip Johnson published Darwin on Trial, the physicalists turned it around and put God on trial, demanding that he prove that God exists. And they were ridiculing intelligent design, it seemed, even before anybody seriously proposed it. And they parade their credentials. T.H. Huxley ridiculed people who had less of an education than he had. In answering the critics of his essay on the physical basis of life, he said, quote, "My unlucky lay sermon has been attacked by microscopists, ignorant alike of biology and philosophy, by philosophers not very learned in either biology or microscopy." More than 100 years later, Richard Dawkins continues along the same lines. Quote, "Darwinism, unlike Einsteinism, seems to be regarded as fair game for critics with any degree of ignorance. Einsteinism, of course, is accepted because it has been proved for all the world to see at Alamogordo, Hiroshima, Nagasaki, and 1,000 other places. You don't have to know the meaning of E equals MC squared to know that it is the power that ended World War II, and the power that has since threatened to annihilate us. Darwinism, on the other hand, is far from proved, and after 8 hours of reading about evolution and related subjects in the Encyclopedia Britannica, I was able to see that the evidence was actually against it. So yes, the weak points in the evolution argument can be easily pointed out accurately by critics with any degree of ignorance, like me. Much has been written about natural selection, but what about that other part of the theory? What is meant by random mutation? We have this word random to indicate that we don't know exactly what the outcome will be. We can't calculate mathematically which sides of the dice will end up, but we can say that each one of the six sides has equal possibility of being up, and do the math from there. We can't calculate exactly where a leaf is going to end up, falling from a tree, but we can make some statement about the mean and standard deviation, given no wind, of course. And we know that there are small differences among individuals of the same species, although the basic structure remains the same. But we don't know exactly what forces cause these differences. And until we know what forces cause these differences, we don't know for certain that living creatures evolved by means of purely physical forces. It is not necessary to postulate a god or divine intervention or even an intelligence creating new species. It could simply be rules of chemistry and physics that we don't know about yet. But we really don't know the process by which new species evolve, and the quickness by which new species evolve, as compared to the slowness of adaptation, suggests that these are two different processes. The implied premise in Darwin's theory is that new species evolved without any divine intervention. Here's where biologists are stretched beyond the limits of biology by Darwinism. Because their observations are limited to those of the physical senses, they are not qualified to say anything about the spiritual. They are not qualified to say that evolution did not happen by spiritual intervention. They resolve this question by sliding over from science into physicalism and asserting that the spiritual does not exist. This, of course, is not a valid argument. There is always room in the universe for the spiritual, unless you know the whole universe, absolutely, in all its dimensions. Eklal Kuashana has offered the explanation that angels created new species by genetic engineering when the environment was ready to support those new species. This fits the evidence better than Darwin's theory, given that new species have appeared more quickly than can be explained by the slow process of adaptation. It also fits the evidence far better than the biblical account of creation. It acknowledges evolution, but says that the process was helped along by angels. My friend asked me, "Have you ever seen an angel?" There are three things wrong with this question. First of all, this is Eklal Kuashana's teaching, not mine. Presumably, he has experienced angels. Second, I am presenting it here only as a working hypothesis to be explored and tested. One is not required to supply proof before presenting a hypothesis. And third, it is probably not possible to see an angel because they exist at a higher vibrational rate than physical entities, according to Eklal Kuashana. But there are certainly indications that there are such things as angels. I shall describe later, in my death experience, how I shot up into the presence of the light, and the figure of Christ. It certainly was very convincing that there were very real spiritual beings up there, as I experienced it. The Catholic Church has defined 9 levels of angels. New Age bookstores have whole shelves of books on the subject of angels. Some people I know have actually experienced angels. These people appear to be sane, so it is not logical, not valid, not scientific to simply dismiss the idea of angels. Scientists seem to have been steered away from intelligent design by the word supernatural, which carries with it the false premise that the natural is known. The natural, to the physicalists, means the physical, and supernatural means anything non-physical, which to their way of thinking does not exist and is therefore imaginary. Actually, everything that exists should be considered natural. We don't know what that is, and it is science's job to find out. We know that Santa Claus, the Easter Bunny, and the Tooth Fairy are imaginary characters invented by adults for children. But we don't know for certain about spiritual beings, such as ghosts and angels. These entities have only been dismissed by physical scientists, not proved to be imaginary. Stephen Jay Gould dismissed Eklal Kuashani's explanation under the category of some personal versions of creation. The word personal is used by authoritarian types as a put-down to mean not important or none of the rest of us care. The Ultimate Frontier by Eklal Kuashana had sold 200,000 copies by the time I was aware of it in 1971. That's 200,000 more than personal. The theory is certainly out there and published and publicized and in major libraries and far from personal. In fact, it reflects badly on Stephen Jay Gould as a scholar that he did not acknowledge this. And then there is the trickery of labeling any argument in favor of creation, creationism or creationist, which is then defined by the weakest possible argument, usually the fundamentalist interpretation of the Bible, that the earth and all living creatures were created by God in 6 days in 4004 BC, an argument that has already been disproved scientifically. Actually, so many invalid arguments have been advanced by religious people in favor of creation that the word creationism itself carries with it a stigma. Simply linking an argument to creationism by saying that creationists have used it is a device that is used to dismiss it. But if Eklal Kuashana's explanation is not dismissed or ignored or put down or misrepresented, it can be seen that it fits the data much better than Darwin's theory. All it is doing really is replacing the idea of random mutation with genetic engineering. Well, actually, it is postulating angels and a whole other dimension or dimensions in the universe. I guess that's just too much for some people to swallow. But if there were such things as angels operating on a whole higher level of existence than human beings, and if these angels had the ability to get into the substance of species and alter their genes, to know, first of all, precisely what alterations were necessary to create the desired species, then yes, this process would take place faster and more predictably and allow new species to evolve in the time frame that has been observed. I realize that Eklal Kuashana's theory is as radical in our day as Darwin's was in his day. And who would be qualified to test it? Biologists aren't qualified to test it. You would have to be able to read the Akashic record or something like that, to know whether angelic intervention occurred. Is there an Akashic record? Biologists don't know. And you would also have to be able to read the Akashic record to be able to say with certainty that angelic intervention did not occur. Unintelligent design is beyond the scope of biology either, to prove or disprove. So, it appears that there are major problems with unintelligent design. First of all, biologists may have disproved it already. Second, the use of the word random implies that they don't know the exact mechanism that generates new species, or whether it is different from the mechanism responsible for adaptation. And third, the use of the word random implies that they don't know whether that mechanism was a higher intelligence. And because biologists have limited their view to the known physical, they aren't qualified to determine that new species were not produced by higher intelligence. In my review on Amazon.com of Why Evolution is True by Jerry A. Coyne, my mention of angels was met with the most extreme ridicule I have ever witnessed in my life. The physical scientists have not only ignored the possibility that there might be such a thing as angels, but they have gone one step further and set up barriers of extreme social pecking to prevent people from even asking the question. This ridicule might be justified if it was supported by solid scientific evidence, but it is not. It is simply an attempt to discredit the target and destroy that person's credibility in the view of the audience. In the academic community, this social pecking goes beyond ridicule. People can lose their jobs and their entire social status simply by asking the question, is there a higher intelligence in the universe, and might it have played some part in its creation? This extreme ridicule and the social degradation that goes with it create an extreme bias where people are deterred from even looking for such a thing as angels. This bias works against impartial scientific inquiry. So, the ridicule is more than just unscientific. Because of the bias it creates, it is actually anti-scientific. Creation has to be ruled out by legitimate means, not by ridicule, bias, or force.